Welcome to the Ars Technicast, where we bring you the latest in the worlds of computing, technology, science, and everything else in between. During each episode, a group of Ars staffers will dig deep into some of the issues we have covered on the site. We will also talk about some other stuff we are doing when we're not circling the Ars orbiting headquarters. I'm your host, Senior Apple Editor Jackie Chang, and on this week's show, we have our open source editor, Ryan Paul.
Hello.
Social editor, Cesar Torres.
Hello.
And Ars contributor, Casey Johnston.
Hello.
This week, we are dedicating our show to sci-fi. We all pretty much just came off of watching Prometheus for the first time, so that is definitely going to be the dominant topic. And just as a warning to listeners, we will probably discuss lots of spoilers. So if by the time you listen to this, which should be about a week after Prometheus first came out, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it and you don't want to listen to spoilers, then do not listen to this podcast. Otherwise, we're going to be talking about Prometheus as well as a bunch of other sci-fi films that are related and probably even a few that are not related. So I guess we'll just get started. So I guess we all saw Prometheus except for Casey, right?
That's correct.
But you did hear a bunch of spoilers, so it's cool that we talk about this.
Yeah, when I knew we were going to be talking about it, and then I hadn't seen it yet, I just kind of started reading all of the spoilery articles about like the bad science and stuff like that. So I'm partly versed.
This particular film takes place 30 years before the events from Alien, which by now I think a lot of people have seen, and if you haven't, you should go check it out. And we follow along the crew of a ship called Prometheus. That's the name of the movie, ding, ding, ding. And they arrive on a planet in a system that has been really out of reach for a long time. And they're sent there on a scientific mission to figure out what signals have been sent to the Earth by, I guess, some alien civilization. And to meet those aliens that have been sending these signals. So it follows basically their investigation on that planet and some artifacts and structures, like buildings that are there. And then, of course, mayhem ensues because they do figure out what's there. And it's, well, I guess I could spoil some of it, right? They realize that the reasons why the aliens have contacted us on Earth may be a little bit nefarious, I guess. And so pretty intriguing. I like how they did some of this. They connect a lot of archaeological sites from the world, from Earth, like Sumerian archaeology and the Mayas. And they basically find a galaxy or some area in the universe where these signals are being sent. So these scientists that go, they go through the Wayland Corporation, which is mentioned in the franchise. And there are some corporate people on the ship. And then there's a scientist, and their job is to figure out what's going on. So once they get there, they discover that these structures where these aliens have lived have mostly just dead bodies of the aliens. And in the process of discovering what happened to the bodies, then there's a bigger set of history that's revealed about how long ago the aliens have been around and why, how they're connected to human beings. And as it turns out, we share the DNA with these aliens. And so the film, I mean, we could start talking a lot about the plot, but it basically opens up a whole set of questions about whether the aliens created us for good purposes or bad purposes, because they basically made human beings out of their own DNA.
Okay. So I guess for those of us who have seen it, I mean, what was your reaction to it initially?
You know, I really enjoyed the movie. I thought that it was very entertaining, very well acted. But I thought that there were a lot of holes in the narrative, and there were places where I felt that the writing was very weak. I think a large part of the problem is that they were so preoccupied with building a foundation for a new franchise that they sort of lost track of telling the story that they set out to tell.
So admittedly, I am kind of a harsh critic on sci-fi films in general. I generally think that they are usually pretty bad. Even the ones that I like, they're pretty bad. So I kind of went into this with relatively low expectations, and I came out of it. I really enjoyed it. This is not to say that there wasn't bad dialogue and, you know, plot holes, because when I was watching it, I felt like the dialogue was particularly painful. But I don't know. Overall, I enjoyed the movie. I don't know. What did you think, Cesar?
I really loved it. But I'm going to first talk about what the movie was not for me, what it didn't do. I agree with Ryan. I think there's some pretty critical problems with the writing. But for those of you who have seen it, or if you're just deciding to go for the spoilers, like the visual impact of that movie just alone is the reason, one of the reasons to see it. It just looks above and beyond what you've seen in a lot of sci-fi movies. But to talk about the story itself, I think that's really the heart of what's going on with this movie. It's really making a lot of people get into discussions about what the story was, whether it accomplished what it set out to do. A lot of people are very upset about whether it does that or not. And for me, I found it very satisfying as a way to kind of branch off from the Alien franchise, as Ryan was talking about. It is meant to sort of become its own thing, and it's quite different. The things it's interested in are really different. So for me, it really worked to the point where I've seen it twice, and I wouldn't mind seeing it again.
Now, I actually thought, it's funny that you say this, because I actually thought that it basically played into the Alien franchise exactly how anyone would expect it to. Which for me, I mean, to me, I felt like it just spelled everything out in your face. Even though, I mean, you know, the Alien franchise, you kind of already know the backstory a little bit, so it's not like it was too murky, but I don't know. I mean,
I think that up until maybe like the last 5 minutes of the movie, it does a really good job of doing its own thing. It's not too concerned with making things fit or be really spelled out for people that it's the prequel to Alien, or that it takes place 30 years before. But there is a moment at the end where I actually felt a little bit cheated. I didn't feel they needed to show something so explicitly to let people know that, you know, we now know how the Alien monster came about.
What was the thing that you're referring to?
Well, it's, you know, if you go
just
through
the appearance of the thing that busts out of the engineer's chest at the end, obviously.
Yeah, once he's been hatching the thing, what comes out is basically the prototype, or the early version of the Alien. Same head, okay. Same skeleton. The jaw was a little different. And I obsess about these details because I've loved the Alien movies for so long. It's not quite the same Alien, but it's the beginning of it. And I felt like they didn't need to show that. Personally.
The jaw being different, that's actually a fairly standard Alien trope. The alien, like its actual physical appearance, it inherits characteristics of the thing that it spawned from. Mm-hmm. So that's actually fully consistent. You know, the fact that the jaw and the head shape were a little bit different than, you know, one that came out of a human, that's actually fairly consistent with the rest of the franchise.
And if we can talk about that for a moment, I feel like they did a very good job of being consistent with the original trilogy of movies. In that sense, because in those movies, the alien, like you said, changes. Each time it has a different host. So if it inhabits a dog, it can start walking on all fours, etc. But right. If you go back to the beginning of this, the goo, this primordial DNA kind of stuff that makes things change, it seemed to me it would take on whatever form it came into contact with. Because isn't one of the first creatures that appears that sort of a white worm that previously it was hanging around where there are all these little
like the earthworms.
Yeah, so it took on a shape of an earthworm, and to me I love that. I felt like that was playing well and doing well by the audience and making things satisfying without spelling it all out.
Yeah, I think in terms of integration with the rest of the franchise, it had some very nice touches like that. I think one area where I was disappointed was I think that it would have been nice if they had taken and kind of tied it back into like the events of the 2004 Alien vs. Predator a little bit more. Because it's like, you know, here you have like this whole, you know, narrative from 2004 where all of these things have kind of already been discovered on Earth. And it's like, wouldn't that kind of maybe be the influence for Weyland Corporation even believing this tall tale about, you know, aliens and stuff? I thought that there was an opportunity to do something really compelling that they didn't take.
That I would love to know. We'd have to get an interview with Ridley Scott to figure out whether they felt that that spinoff of Alien vs. Predator was worth including.
Like they didn't want to make it part of the canon.
Because it's upset a lot of fans. A lot of people don't like those movies.
I loved AVP. I thought that was like one of the better.
Oh, man. I mean, I agree with you that they had that opportunity, but I read something somewhere, of course I can't remember now, but where Ridley Scott basically sort of, he didn't say anything terrible about Alien vs. Predator, but he kind of spoke about it in a way that was like dismissive of it as part of the whole thing. So I got the impression that he was like, well, you know, Alien franchise kind of doesn't count Alien vs. Predator as part of it. So maybe that's why. I don't know. I personally was not super fond of that movie, but like I said earlier, I am very critical of most sci-fi movies, so... Now, so here's the thing that I'm still wondering, and I've talked about this for days now to try and figure it out. It's actually not really a question, but more like, I felt like the character, at least, of Charlize Theron's character, she was basically in charge of everything. I felt not only was she really kind of empty, I mean, she basically just played the part of the evil, crazy person that runs the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I, not that that's bad, you know, you always need that character, but she even had, so it was, you know, in the end, her old, well, actually, this actually is kind of a throwback to a previous podcast episode that we did where we were talking about the singularity and how it could be funded by people rich people who just want to live forever. So basically it turned out that this whole thing was funded by a rich old guy who wanted to live forever, and it was her father. But so my question is, she obviously did not get along with her father. They had a poor falling out when they saw each other again. So why did she even do this in the first place? Why did she even, you know, man this ship to go and find the alien, except to inherit the empire, I guess?
Yeah, I think that her motivations were just completely inexplicable. There was absolutely no explanation for any of it. Like, there were a lot of other dimensions, too. Like, her relationship with her robot brother. I mean, they never explain why there's friction between them or what it is that, you know, that he's holding back and why. And it just, I mean, none of it ever makes any sense. They don't explain
it. If you had a robotic brother who was favored by your father, wouldn't you be... Wouldn't you be a little bit irritated?
And to take it a step further, if you were a screenwriter and you wanted to show that, there's good ways to show some of that story, and they just didn't do it. I don't know if there's probably a longer cut of the film that maybe shows some of those scenes, but when you see it, she's one of the great examples of a couple of characters that don't quite work, and it pulls away from like the richness of the story, because these provocative questions about whether, you know, we can understand where we come from and if that's a good thing or a bad thing, or this connection to aliens, like, it's so interesting. It moves the story forward. These small moments where you're like, why did this character do something weird or out of character, they pull you away. The scientists, let's talk about the scientists for a moment. There are two main scientists that we follow in the story, and it's a husband and wife team. And the wife, to me, at least kind of read more like what I expect of a scientist, somebody who wants to follow a method and kind of figure things out. But her husband, I have to just say this, I mean, that was a character that made no sense. He did the least scientific.
Well, you want to talk about that? Yeah. Like, half the scientists on that thing made no sense as scientists. I mean, what kind of scientist gets to, like, the greatest discovery in human history? He's like, oh, it's time for me to go back to the ship. I mean, that part was so ridiculous. And you just know that as soon as they do that, they walk away on their own, those guys are screwed, you know? It was so obvious.
Well, I felt from the very beginning that this is me as in like editor mode in my brain. I felt from the very beginning that they had a bad attitude. You know, why were they even there if they were going to have such a bad attitude about even being there? You know, you're on a I'm going to try not to swear on this, but you're on a ship to go find aliens, and these people are like, "Oh, I don't want to go out and look for aliens." I mean, they just whine the whole time.
they didn't even know what they were coming on board for. They didn't get the briefing until they had arrived at the destination.
Yeah, but
they were just there for money. But I still think that, yeah, I agree, it didn't make a lot of sense.
It upset me the whole time. I did not actually even care that they eventually had a terrible demise.
See, that's the thing. You can't really emotionally invest in characters that are just that ridiculous.
Well, you know, they went for some very cliched tropes of horror movies that didn't belong in this. So they're really trying to make something hopefully a higher level. And the writing just showed that immediately. In the horror movies, if you're in the haunted house, the character always stupidly stays in the haunted house and is, you know, chased by the monster. But in this, generally, I mean, because they were scientists, they didn't treat anything that way. They basically were like, they would see the head. Let's talk about the head. You know, Casey, we're giving you all these spoilers. Once they're inside the structure, one of their biggest findings in there is an actual head from one of these giant aliens that were related to. They find it, and immediately the wife counterpart of this team says, "We need to take this back to the ship to study it." The husband is angry. I don't know what he was angry about, but he like crossed his arms basically and said, "I don't want to deal with this." I don't understand why he did that. And then back on the ship, he did the same thing. It's as if he was no longer involved with what was going on there. And in the movie and in the script, there's no explanation for that. I think that, again, just pulls away from what it could have been, a more compelling story.
Now, let me ask, how long was this movie? Was it like overlong? Like, could they have like just made it longer and like explained some of these things? Or what do you guys think?
It was, I think it was just over 2 hours, like 2 hours and 4 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
So they could have like added another half hour to like explain why people were apprehensive about the trip, didn't want to take the head back, etc.
I think the length was fine. I think that they could have cut some of the superfluous stuff and then used that time to get into the parts that were more interesting. Like, I think Charlize Theron, they could have removed her character entirely and it would have been a better movie.
Absolutely.
And they could have used the time to do more.
There's also something so plain and simple about the first Alien movie that accomplishes this, where you can understand what each of the people in the crew are trying to do. In the first movie, they were people all basically in the same kind of social class. It was like a cargo ship, essentially, right? So they're just kind of moving things about. And so in that movie, it's really easy to understand like why they either need to go to the planet or not. And there's maybe a character or two who deviates from that. In this, they had people who were scientists. You have the robot. You have this corporate head played by Charlize Theron. Then you also end up having her father on board. Suddenly, you don't know why there's so much commotion going either way, and it's just too many characters probably for a single movie of 2 hours. I think cutting some of that would have helped.
You know, although I agree with your analysis that is kind of all over the place, like socioeconomically, it also kind of reflects sort of a little bit of reality, because, you know, if we tried to pull that off today, that's exactly how it would be. There would be some corporate douchebag at the front, and then there would be some scientists and, you know, some random people. I think in that sense, I mean, it would be a little bit mixed in reality. But you're right. It does make it hard, and that's part of why that's part of what plays into the whole film, you know, the different people's different perspectives on how to approach this.
Yeah. Well, so I want to talk just for a moment about the themes of the original movies versus this, because I think that's where it became three times as interesting for me. The fact that Ridley Scott was willing to take a chance and break away from the alien ideas, because the first movie, did you see that? The first Alien movie?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So we've all seen it here. That movie, to me, when you really dig deep, it's a horror movie set in space, you know, that's been written about a lot. It's a horror movie, but it has these very tight concerns about claustrophobia, like the images, everything that happens is very claustrophobic. And there's this weird fear of the body, right? Because of things exploding through the body and coming out and being attacked. There's a lot of metaphors about like rape in it.
I actually felt like, I mean, I felt this before, but I felt it especially now after Prometheus, that actually rape is a huge underlying theme in this whole, in the whole franchise almost.
Yes, yes.
Especially in Prometheus.
Especially in Prometheus. Well, I think all of them. The design itself of the alien has been controversial since they made the first movie, because H.R. Giger, the Swedish artist who makes these, makes extremely... I guess to some people it's revolting, and to other people provocative art, and they always involve body cavities and sort of rape elements. But the design of the alien itself is meant to do that. It has essentially, you know, sort of very sexual looking parts, and it penetrates people. But Prometheus is interesting to me because it has some of that. It continues to use those elements from the Alien movie, but it's really not about horror elements, I didn't think. It's really about questions of the universe and religion as well. And I felt like it did really well by at least branching off in that direction. The original franchise does not really have a lot of that, except maybe Alien 3. Well,
you know, I got to say that the original franchise, one of the things I actually like about it is that they have such different thematic elements in each individual movie. Like, they really don't use that same original Alien formula for each one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, James Cameron talking about, you know, making Aliens, which is the original sequel, he said compared to the original Alien, he wanted less horror and more terror. And, you know, for him, like, a huge part of what he was trying to do, there was, like, a lot of kind of Vietnam War kind of analogy going there, where he's showing, like, the just the way that you know, the difference between the way that the humans were trying to fight and the way that the aliens were fighting back, just in that setting. Like, mm-hmm. you have all of these Marines with all these heavy weapons and stuff, and it's not doing them a damn bit of good, because they're in an environment where, you know, they're fighting something that just doesn't fight the same way. So, you know, it kind of, like, I think that a lot of that was, you know, captured in the second movie. And I think that was very different from the first movie. You have a lot more intensity and a lot more conflict in there. And then, you know, like you said, the third movie is also very different. You know, that one, you know, did have some religious themes. It got into the idea of, you know, predisposition towards evil, or whether it's something that can be controlled. And, you know, when you juxtapose that against the aliens, where you have these extremely intelligent creatures that are acting seemingly out of instinct, you have to wonder about it. You know, I think each one of those movies really had this different thematic elements that had thought-provoking characteristics.
No, absolutely. I think maybe I should clarify that by what I mean with Ridley Scott branching off, it's really from his own original movie, because he's only directed the two, the first Alien and then Prometheus. And then the other ones after that, you know, were moved on to other directors,
right,
like
yeah.
James Cameron. But I thought it just took a really great, huge chance in doing that. And I think that's kind of what's sparking a lot of this discussion for people. There's elements of the singularity. There's talks of Christianity in there. And, It does leave a lot, what some people call sort of holes in the plot. I think there are some, for sure, but these very wide questions it puts out there about where the characters came from, the universe, whether those aliens are good or bad, are terrific, because it doesn't answer them. I really like the fact that I think you imagine it as an audience member, and that I thought was great.
Now, the thing is, I actually don't care about plot holes very much, because I agree with you. I think there's a certain level in which things are left unsaid because you're supposed to think about it. You know, there are only a couple of things that irritate me, like I mentioned earlier with the Charlize Theron character. Like, I was just like, why the hell is she even here? But
I actually have a theory about her character, because
yeah,
it seems like they're trying to, in the script, they're trying to raise this question of whether she's a human or a robot. And it seems like they kind of leave that ambiguous, like, to the point where one character even asks her at one point, like, mm-hmm. almost jokingly. And to me, it seems almost like Ridley Scott kind of revisiting Blade Runner.
Yeah, I thought about that, but I felt like
it just didn't work well, you know?
Yeah, I don't think one should do that. I mean, he's already working off such a strong legacy of these other movies. To bring in this third element of Blade Runner, it for the super geeks, of course they'll love that. I loved it, but I think it takes away from it, and it's too confusing. To me, I thought also that her character, every single one of those movies usually has a corporate representative. Paul Reiser in Aliens, was a really great one, but they didn't really have somebody on board who, I guess, was the spokesperson, and that's who she was. But the way that they wrote her scenes, I didn't think she needed to be in there.
Yeah, I agree completely. It didn't need to be there, and it didn't work. I mean, I can see kind of what they were trying to do with it, but it ended up falling flat. And it's not even like her fault, really. You know, Charlize Theron, I think she just wasn't given anything to work with there.
Aside from hating her just because she was the evil character, I mean, I agree with you. She probably wasn't given a whole lot to work with. But in general, though, I don't really mind the quote-unquote holes so much. I do think that the open questions are part of the upsides to Prometheus, which is, you know, it forces you to think about all these possibilities, even if it is just sci-fi. You know, what does it mean for these aliens to have created us from their DNA? And what was their motivation? That was a huge open question. Why did they even do that in the first place? Were they created by other aliens? I mean, who's the originator of all of this?
Well, the one of the things that starts it off is just by the name alone, but they have a nod to the Greek myth of Prometheus, which was a titan, you know, like this giant sort of mythical being who decided to bring fire to man, which is technology in a way.
Well, more significantly, Prometheus created man.
That's right, and he created man. Yeah, absolutely. And by doing so, he angered the gods. And then he was cast out and bound to a rock where an eagle would eat his liver every single day as punishment.
And until he was liberated by Hercules, who was, you know, ostensibly from the fruit of what he had created.
Yes, and because of him, we also get the Pandora's box. That was another result of this, that man would be given this box that could unleash all sorts of terrible things to punish man as well. So there's great connections to all of this. I mean, you can find a lot of reasons to find it in the film, but it's great that they include that in the first scene, which a lot of people don't even like because they feel like it doesn't belong in there, is great because I think it's a throwback to the myth, but they don't tell you, Casey, since you haven't seen it, at the beginning we first see the aliens. Rather than seeing the humans, we see one of the aliens on some planet that isn't even, you know, identified. And he basically sacrifices himself to begin life in some way or another on this planet. And that goes right back to that myth. And I thought that was really great because it's tying in like some of this mythology and then also raising questions about the nature of the universe and God. And even with all these questions about the aliens, they're still, you know, they also leave this third possibility open for the existence of God, because one of the characters is very concerned about whether God exists or not. I just thought they did some of that kind of writing in the movie pretty well.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, like this effort to create a bigger picture kind of world around, you know, the Alien franchise, there were some aspects of that were very well executed. And I thought that scene was very interesting, the way that it was depicted. It really had a kind of transcendental, ethereal aspect to it that's very different from the more visceral quality that you kind of expect from an alien movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I could just watch that beginning piece at the beginning of the movie just on a 3D or IMAX screen over and over because it just looked beautiful.
Yeah, so, there was a lot of nice visuals like that too. The console, holographic console display in the alien ship towards the end was also just absolutely stunning to watch.
So in general, the plot is just kind of dumb, and I'm missing out on nothing by hearing the content. I'm only missing out by not having seen the visuals of the movie itself.
Yeah, I personally think that you should see it because I mean, the visuals are great and all, but I think that you should watch it anyway if you're gonna like watch the whole Alien franchise, I guess.
Yeah. I didn't think the story was quite that bad. Like, it wasn't an awful story. It was just a flawed story.
I even think the story is fine. It was just actually the surface level stuff, like the dialogue and that kind of thing, that was really bad for me. But I don't know. I thought the story was okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've said that I think there's a couple of main problems there with some of the writing in the script, or maybe some of the performances too, but I highly recommend this, Casey. I mean, whether you like sci-fi or not, or aliens, you should just go check it out, because it does, I think it either raises big ideas and questions for you, or on a visual level, it does that too. It makes you sort of think about things in a different way. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So while we're on this topic, I read this one analysis that Cesar sent me, and I'm sure we'll link it in the show notes, but there were a lot of kind of little throwbacks here and there that are sort of linked to a lot of other sci-fi movies, you know, maybe sometimes coincidentally and sometimes not. For example, there were some similarities with 2001, A Space Odyssey. So I don't know if you guys also felt like that was coincidental or not in terms of plot or little references. I wish I could remember which reference was that someone said was similar to Back to the Future, but I also like that.
The 2001 thing is pretty insightful. I mean, if you think about like the monolith in 2001 and the way that it the role that it plays in, you know, advancing creatures, you know, it just, there is definitely a kind of a parallel there. The one thing that I thought about a lot when I was watching the movie is it seems like very similar to some of the premise elements in the Stargate television show.
Oh, I could definitely see some of that. Yeah. Yeah. That post, actually, we should talk about that, because it's been circulating some podcasts and lots of websites that are linking to it, because this guy, his name is Adrian Bott. He lives in the UK. He drew all these parallels to other movies, and then I think there's a lot of religious imagery that he mentions is in the film. There's a mural in one of the rooms that looks very religious, and he spends a lot of time talking about it. But before the podcast, I actually asked him to talk to us about some questions that I had about the film, because it's such a great post, and we'll link to it. But I'm just going to read what he sent us, because he's not here.
It's not even not even a stretch to imply that there's all these religious implications. I mean, they straight up spell it out a couple of times.
Yeah, they want you to do that. I just think...
Yeah, especially with the cross. I mean, it doesn't get more obvious.
Oh, yeah. And if you see Ridley Scott's movies, every single movie that he makes, he loads it with symbols that are mostly visual. So it's not any surprise that he would do that in this. The what makes it interesting is that some of them are really left open to interpretation. So of course there's a lot of discussions around it. But actually, the question I had for this guy Adrian was about the science, because that's kind of what we've been discussing, and that sort of is at the root of how we sort of frame it. But let's see what he said. He said, I think Prometheus harkens back to a pantomimic B-movie version of science in which the principal activity is to pour colored liquids into oddly shaped test tubes while looking grave, and the moral aspects of the story are the real point. The scientist characters don't really behave as such, pulling off their helmets and messing with severed alien heads without even basic precautions. And at one point, a character merely repeats back what's on the computer screen. It's as if science, and on a more basic level, empiricism itself, are being deliberately robbed of their reliability in the universe of Prometheus.
I think that's, I mean, to me, that's painfully obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the point was not so much to be scientifically correct, but to deliver some other message. So I agree with that.
Yeah, I have to say, on a general level, it really bothers me when, like, because it's just so clear. I haven't even been in, like, I went to college for science, and I spent time in a lab, like on a part-time basis, and it's just, like, so clear when actors are not behaving like scientists. And it's just something that, like, any person who spent time in a lab could tell you, like, oh, this isn't real. Instead, they would do this. And I think John Gitlin wrote a post on this, which I assume we can also link in the show notes, that said it so perfectly. Like, you could give a couple of grad students some beer and pizza, and they would go through your script and tell you every instance, like, a scientist would never do this, like, just do it this way. And the thing is, so easy.
The thing is, we're not, I mean, let's be honest, that would be a boring movie.
Well, one, it would be really boring, and if we were to put science fiction always at that, to set the bar that way for every single science fiction piece, we wouldn't have much science fiction that could meet it. There's some great examples of hardcore science fiction, but that tends to alienate a lot of people.
Well, I don't necessarily. I mean, I kind of agree with Casey. I think, like, if you don't have to make every detail scientifically accurate, but you can have some consultants who at least make it so that you're not doing things that are just like breathtakingly clueless. It's not that hard.
It doesn't have to be slavish to, like, the scientific community, but, like, I'm going to trot out an example here, and it's going to say a lot about me, but Big Bang Theory. A lot of people hate that show, and a lot of people like it. I like it because, on the level of, like, scientists, it actually does feel accurate on that level. Like, it works. It doesn't feel silly. I don't know. That's just, like... And they have, I think they have, like, one consultant, maybe, who does that for them. But it's just such an easy thing to just, like, take care of. Like, it just shouldn't be overlooked.
The vast majority of these movies, they actually have military consultants, like, to help with, like, combat stuff to make sure that it kind of passes the smell test. And, like, why can't they do that with the science?
They could have used some very just simple things here. I mean, it's common sense stuff. You don't even have to be a scientist. But, Casey, let me put you in a scenario. Let's say Ars Technica sends us to outer space.
We're going to send Casey in the front lines.
We're going to go. So it's pretty amazing, and we've got snacks, and it's going to be fun. And we get there, and we find a structure on a planet that doesn't really have a good atmosphere for us to breathe, right? So we're going, and we've got our little suits that have our oxygen, and, you know, we're good. If we discover that it seems as if there's a good atmosphere inside one of these structures in this planet, would you take your helmet off for hours or a day?
No, not ever.
Right.
That's silly.
Right.
It's outrageous.
It's outrageous. It's just as simple as that.
I was almost yelling at the screen when this is happening, and I don't even care about the science aspects.
Yeah, especially when you have all of these freaking dead alien bodies, like maybe they died from a contagion or something.
Jeez.
Do you really want to expose yourself?
See, yeah. Something like that, it would be as simple as you have somebody have, like, a little sort of built-in atmosphere reader on their forearm. They, like, push two buttons, and it's like, oh, yep, the atmosphere is exactly what we breathe normally, and then everyone can take their helmets off.
Well,
that takes 2 seconds.
That is
what they did.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay, then that's fine.
I was still kind of skeptical.
Yeah, admittedly, I still would not. If I was in that scenario, I would not do it.
Yeah. I would do it in that case.
Yeah, and that one, they had so little.
He's like, screw it, I'll just take the helmet off, I don't care.
When they make the sequel, I guess we're all going to be in it. And then you could lead the way and be like, I'll take my helmet off.
You have a guinea pig in that group who you, like, I don't know, draw straws, do some Rochambeau to figure out who's going to find out. But
you know, I think this comes right back to all of this stuff. Like, there's some, you know, there's some issues there, but... just in those scenes, the imagery, it's just layer upon layer of references to other movies, to religion, to science, not done very well, but it is a reason to see it, because you can sort of peel all these layers back and kind of look at it and be like, wow, that's, you know, they were trying to do something big with it, for sure.
All right, so I have a question, you know, like another one of those things in the plot that was never adequately explained. Maybe somebody could help me figure out. When David, the robot, infects the scientist, like, what the hell was he hoping to accomplish? That never made sense to me.
I think that he was just programmed by the old guy who was trying to live forever. I think he was just programmed to do whatever he could to make sure that they had direct contact with the engineers. No matter what.
And to experiment faster than would be normal. I think that to me made sense, but I think it's not always clear that it's being programmed.
Okay, say you've got an expert with you who knows all of this crazy stuff, who could actually be useful in the event that you happen to contact the aliens. Would you choose him as your target of experimentation?
No, I mean, I agree with you. I think that was stupid.
Like, why didn't they bring guinea pigs or something on the ship?
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
seriously.
Because that's science. That's what we do in our world, right? That's we experiment on animals or sometimes on human beings. It's unfortunate it's happened in the past, but yeah, that's why didn't they do that?
If he was going to be evil, he should have picked somebody who was less critical to the mission.
Now, the thing that bothered me wasn't so much that he actually did it, but then rather later on, you know, when his head got ripped off and he was still functional, all of a sudden he's best friends with everybody, trying to help everyone out. So, you know, he's turned around, he's no longer evil. You know, this is a robot, okay? I would not trust this asshole. You know, after
maybe all of his programming, kind of like once his master died, all of the programming that he was supposed to do to help him kind of was like obviated or something. But they could have made that clear if they wanted it to make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It was not consistent, although it didn't bother me that much. I was just, you know, I just felt like, oh, you know, he's playing the kind of shady robot character that you can't fully trust because he's a robot.
I think it's a storytelling issue. I think they suggest a lot that the robots in this movie parallel the humans because they were created by a higher entity, right? So we created the robots, and they play it like a lot of other movies do, which is this robot doesn't have a soul. It can't sort of, you know, do anything for itself to have its own consciousness. And at some point, it seems to me in the movie that he does. There's something snaps for him, and he becomes either sort of more evil or whatever. But he does things that seem a little off or on his own. And I think that in the storytelling isn't shown clearly, like when it changed for him. Because I think at the beginning, he is following all these instructions from the old guy, but then he's just off on his own, just, you know, causing havoc. Like, why does he do that? They should have just explained it.
He did cause a lot of havoc. I mean, he did so many things that he didn't need to do.
Yeah, that jeopardized the whole mission, yeah.
Well, and even the, you know, can we talk about the pregnancy scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in that scene, he has a few lines that are said towards the character who's pregnant that are clearly, you know, they're ironic, they're funny, and really you can tell, like, he's crossed over into sort of, like, evil robot mode, and they just should have explained, like, why he does that, because that scene is terrifying. Then he just unleashes, like, the worst thing ever to happen.
That's the thing. Okay, so say he is, now this, I'm going to call myself on this, because say he is programmed to be evil and sabotage people, but what is his motivation to keep her pregnant and keep her suffering? There's no motivation to allow someone to birth an alien. It's only going to ruin the entire ship, which is exactly what happened. So what is the point of that, except to just flat out just be a jerk?
Well, he has information about the aliens, though, because he's learned their language, right? And he's read the crew members' dreams. That it's in the beginning of the movie, but he's read her dreams too. So there's ideas that he has that are not explained to the audience, and he has information about the aliens that we don't know.
Well, that's true. And I guess in some ways he could just have some crazy android ideas of what's going on.
See, the parallel is to that part in Aliens where, you know, Paul Reiser's character is trying to get, you know, Ripley, you know, impregnated with the alien so that he can bring her back frozen, mm-hmm. and get a sample through quarantine so they can weaponize it. But, you know, and it's like almost like a similar kind of scenario. And it's like, it almost seems like that's kind of like what they're getting at with that part. But they never explained it that way in Prometheus.
You're right. I actually think that makes more sense than what happened in Prometheus, which is that it wasn't really explained at all. It was just like, right. Oh, he's just horrible and evil and weird, and he's going to try and keep her pregnant just because. So I agree with that.
But an amazing performance by Michael Fassbender. I would put that as Oscar-worthy, his robot portrayal.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I loved it.
He was Magneto in X-Men First Class, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he was better in that, honestly.
And then I think the creature design, I just loved it. I mean, that's a huge part of all the Alien movies, but obviously we don't really get the full recognizable alien until that piece at the end. But all the other things that they showed, like, were just not, they weren't what I expected, and that's what I loved. They felt all brand new to me. That squid and all the worms, loved it.
Yeah, I really liked the like the helmets for the engineers and the uniforms that, you know, like the outer suit they were wearing, that kind of thing. I thought that was really cool, and it almost seems like some of the design there was kind of a slight nod to the Predator thing. I thought that the tentacle aliens were just fantastic. There was definitely some good design going on there.
The engineers were pretty amazing too. They looked like they were cut out of marble.
Yeah, there was kind of a texture thing there. I thought that the musculature was a little bit hokey, but I think the texturing there was very well done.
Ryan, that musculature was just fine. I loved it.
I thought it was a little hokey, too, personally.
Well, because they're supposed to be, like, more primordial beings. That's kind of what I got. Even their skin, right?
It kind of is a throwback, again, to the myth, right? Prometheus and gods in general. You know, they're kind of thought of as these perfect beings. So in that way, I actually thought that was good because, you know, they sort of play them up as perfect, giant, you know, humanoid-type things. I think maybe it just annoyed me because the guy who was sitting next to me the whole time when I was watching this movie was narrating it, and every single time they showed one of these engineers, he was like, "Damn, that guy works out!" And, and I'm like, oh, God, you know, can we just watch this movie?
See,
for me, I thought that, like, that design on the engineers, to me, it just seemed like kind of reminiscent to the Kabbalah, like Adam Kadmon, the Primal Man.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought of, at least.
That's interesting.
My closing thought is I'm still going to see this movie even after hearing all of this, because 2 hours is an extremely reasonable time for a movie.
I think it's totally worth seeing even if you've read bad reviews, because, you know, I read a lot of bad reviews before I saw this. And, you know, I enjoyed it, even if purely on an entertainment level, I enjoyed it.
Also, I'm buoyed by the fact that Roger Ebert gave it 4 stars, I believe, which is just like... I think that's the most positive review I've seen out there.
Now, there's quite a few. I highly recommend this. I know this is like the 500th time on the show that I've said it, but I do feel like it was smartly done, even though it has a couple of little nicks on its surface.
Yeah, I think that, like, my final take here is that it really was a fantastically enjoyable film that was very interesting, had a lot going for it, despite the flaws.
Well, let's go see it together.
Yeah.
Someday. Someday.
I hear that, at least for Cicero and I, one of our friends is trying to put together a second viewing party. So,
I guess for Cicero, right?
Yeah, for you, it'd be third viewing. But yeah.
Does that involve all of you guys, like, spoiling everything immediately before it happens to the whole theater?
Yeah, we'll be the Mystery Science Theater jerks sitting in front.
I'm just glad you were okay with this, Casey. We told you so much about the movie.
I'm spoilers for a movie really don't bother me in general. Like, I don't know. I'll still see things.
I would divorce somebody if they said too many spoilers.
Maybe it's just that I'm not excited or, like, really anticipating stuff a lot, but I don't know. It's fine. Like, I can't really thread everything that I heard today all together into a logical, like, where I feel like I've seen the movie already anyway, so I feel like I would still need to see it in order to know what everyone was talking about.
I think, at least for me, I didn't avoid spoilers at all before I saw it, and I still enjoyed it, so I don't know. I'm sure that the readers, once they listen to this, they'll be like, Jackie likes anything! But, I mean, I will tell you right now, I actually hate most things, so... mostly everything, so I think that it's worth listening to me on this. Well, okay, I guess we'll take that opportunity to just wrap up. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Let us know what you thought of the movie and what you thought of our analysis. I'm sure that ours readers will not be ashamed to tell us how much they liked or hated it. So thank you for listening, and hopefully we will be back in a couple of weeks with a new podcast. Speaking of sci-fi, Lady Gaga...
Yeah, she's pretty sci-fi.
I mean, geez.
Well, that one of those videos, you know, she has her whole mythology about, like, being an outer space alien mother.
We should try and get Lady Gaga to talk about sci-fi with us.
Oh, I would love that.
She might do it.
Maybe.
Let's ask.
Let's ask.
So here's a question for you guys. I think Sis or Paul probably have the best answer to this, but what science fiction books would you like to see made into movies?
Ooh. I have a few.
I have no idea.
It's not quite science fiction, but the Sandman, Neil Gaiman's Sandman.
Oh, yeah, that would be great on screen. That would be great as a cartoon.
Cartoon or even a TV series if they could pull it off like Game of Thrones. But it hits the juicy pleasure center that I have for like mythology meets sci-fi. So I would love it.
You know, they've been working on a Good Omens movie like forever.
Really? I didn't know that was in the works.
Yeah, let me see if I can figure out. I thought that was actually Terry Gilliam working as a director on that. Yeah, Terry Gilliam been working on that movie since 2002. I don't know if they ever got it into filming. But yeah, that was the Neil Gaiman one that I think would be a great movie.
The other one that would be fantastic, and I will put this on everyone's radar because it's just such a great novel, Kindred by Octavia Butler. She's dead now, but that novel she wrote, I think in the 80s or 70s, and it's her own take on vampires, but she just did really interesting stuff with gender and like turning everything upside down, and they're not conventional vampires. They don't like suck your blood with fangs like the way that we think of it. That movie would be mind-blowing if they made it out of the book. So good. So make sure you put it on your reading list because I want everyone to read it. Kindred.
That's interesting. Okay,
I added it to my Amazon wish list.
You seriously will love it. I have it in paper if you want to borrow it in paper, but that's kind of hard.
If you can send me your paper book by Pony Express in the next 2 months, I'd really appreciate it.
I would do that.
I think the number one novel that I'd like to see, sci-fi novel that I'd like to see turn into a movie, would be Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land.
Ooh, I've never read that, actually. I know what it's about, but I've never read it.
I think that would be a good movie. The other one would be, and this would probably be really hard to do, but Charlie Strauss's Accelerando.
Haven't read that either.
Heinlein didn't he write Starship Troopers also?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that movie was awful, by the way. The Starship Troopers.
Yeah, they messed that one up.
Yeah.
Oh, Starship Troopers is a movie that I when I was in high school, I told my parents that I was going to go see it, and then I went to go see another movie that I wasn't allowed to see. And then I came home, and my parents quizzed me on the plot, and I totally made up everything about it. So actually, I never saw Starship Troopers, but maybe I should watch it sometime.
It's on Netflix.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah,
it's actually pretty bad.
Yeah,
I've seen it twice, and once when I was like maybe 12 or 13, and I feel like it wasn't that bad, but I don't know. I haven't seen it in probably 8 years around there. So,
and I've got one more for the list. Because I want to recommend this book to everybody, too. It's more fantasy, so it's not sci-fi. The Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Oh, that was great.
By Susanna Clarke. That I don't think they could actually make a proper movie for it, because it's
too long.
Like 2,000 pages long, but such a great story.
Yeah, that was a fun read.
Yeah. So.
Man, I blasted through that thing in like 2 weeks or something. It was just like you couldn't put it down.
And I wanted more footnotes. It's a novel, completely fictional, but it has a million footnotes, and there still weren't enough.
Yeah.